अभिजतपुरुषपरिचार्याय भागवती प्रभातमुनानुगाभर्गृतविद्वय शैचिर्यप्रहासज्ञानात्मनि भूपीयमान रोमकुलकुलकोट्कण्ठ्य प्रपित्तप्रणय बष्टविदुलोक नयनैवनिजरमणा चरणारिन्दानुध्यानपरिचित्तभक्तियोगेन परिकृत परमदातारम्भीरविद्वय रदभक्त कृष्णस्तं अतिप्रियमानं भगवत्सकार्यं मुपस्मरा.
Did it work well? That's a very interesting means and synonyms in this section.
Taya,
taya, taya.
By that,
by that.
It's tongue,
it's tongue.
In this manner,
in this manner.
Abhidatta,
abhidatta.
Constant,
constant.
Purusha,
purusha.
Of the Supreme Lord,
of the Supreme Lord.
Parichayaya,
parichayaya.
By service,
by service.
Bhagavati,
Bhagavati,
unto the Supreme Personality of
Godhead.
Ravadamana,
Ravadamana,
constantly increasing.
Constantly increasing.
Anuraga,
Anuraga,
of attachment.
Of attachment.
Bhava,
Bhava,
by the Lord.
By the Lord.
Dutta,
Dutta,
melted.
Melted.
Vidaya,
Vidaya,
heart.
Heart.
Shaktiryaha,
Shaktiryaha,
laxity,
laxity,
Prahashadehina,
Prahashadehina,
by the force of transcendental ecstasy,
by the force of transcendental ecstasy,
Atmani,
Atmani,
in his body,
in his body,
would be Niyamana, Ramakulakakulakaha, standing of the hair on end.
Standing of the hair on end.
Orkantya, because of intense longing.
Because of intense longing.
Prapitta,
Prapitta,
produce,
produce.
Pramaya Bhashpanyuddha Avalokanayanaha,
Pramaya Bhashpanyuddha Avalokanayanaha.
Awakening of tears of love in the eyes.
Awakening of tears of love in the eyes.
Obstructing the vision.
Obstructing the vision.
Evam.
Evam.
Thus. Nijadamana arvinda charanaravinda.
Nijadamana arvinda charanaravinda.
Of the Lord's reddish lotus feet.
Of the Lord's reddish lotus feet.
Anudhyana.
Anudhyana.
By meditating.
By meditating.
Chitta,
parichitta,
increase,
increase.
Bhakti yogena,
bhakti yogena,
by dint of devotional service,
by dint of devotional service.
Parikutta,
parikutta,
spreading everywhere,
spreading everywhere.
Tarana,
tarana,
highest,
highest.
Alatha,
alatha,
of spiritual bliss,
of spiritual bliss.
Gambira,
gambira,
very deep,
very deep.
Vidaya Radha,
Vidaya Radha,
in the heart,
in the heart,
which is compared to a lake,
which is compared to a lake.
That is the Hada, the lake. Anugadagadha, immersed,
immersed,
Vishnanaha,
Vishnanaha,
whose intelligence,
whose intelligence,
tongue, that, Abhi,
Abhi.
Although, Kriyamanam,
executing
Bhagavat,
Bhagavat,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
Sapadyam, the worship,
na,
not, Samsara,
remembered,
not remembered. He didn't remember. What didn't he remember? He didn't remember to perform his regulated things. And why he didn't, we'll find out. We'll discuss that.
Translation, the most exalted devotee, Maharaj Bharata, in this way, engaged constantly in devotional service of the Lord. Naturally, his love for Vasudeva Krishna increased more and more and melted his heart. Consequently, he gradually lost all attachment for related duties. The hairs of his body stood on end, and all the ecstatic bodily symptoms were manifest. Tears flowed from his eyes, so much so that he could not see anything. Thus he constantly meditated on the reddish lotus feet of the Lord. At that time his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with the water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regulated service of the Lord. That most exalted devotee, Maharaj Bharata, in this way,
engaged constantly
in the devotional service of the Lord. Naturally, his love for Vasudeva,
Krishna,
increased more and more, and melted his heart. Consequently, he gradually lost all attachment
for regulated duties.
The hairs of his body stood on end, and all the ecstatic bodily symptoms were manifest. Tears flowed from his eyes, so much so that he could not see anything. Thus he constantly meditated on the reddish lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with the water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regulated service of the Lord. When one is actually advanced in ecstatic love for Krishna, 8 transcendental blissful symptoms are manifest in the body. Those are the symptoms of perfection arising from loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since Maharaj Bharata was constantly engaged in devotional service, all the symptoms of ecstatic love were manifest in his body. Om Agnyanandipendasya Vinyanjanam Shadakaya Chakshurvinitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Gopinistam Savitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Dukkha Kadamayam Dharati Swaparantikam Namaste Shramanamati Satchiputram Tasurutam Rupam Tasya Kajam Kudukurim Mahapurindo Savitim While we're reading some very long Sanskrit prose verses in probably the shortest chapter of the Bhagavad-Gita Bhagavatam, the 14 shlokas in this chapter, and 14 long shlokas, but important verses. And this is another testament to the brilliance of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is the book incarnation of Krishna. It's Krishna in the book form. In the temple, some of you may have been to the tempting in Buddha place. And even she draws from this being hungry. And there at Bhagavatam time, the Bhagavatam is presented to the speaker from the altar. The Bhagavatam comes off as the deity, comes from the altar to the podium, to the place where the speaker will sit. And the speaker stands and reads the Bhagavatam. And everybody's standing, because the great personality has come, everybody's standing. Not down the back doing stuff and looking for the mark or something. Everybody's in there to look back. Oh, the Bhagavatam's coming. Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna's coming in this page of the Bhagavatam. And then he doesn't come before ripped up pages and smashed up cover and everything like that. Like sometimes I would get messed up. In the old temples, in the bookcase. But they had this beautiful embroidered cover for the Bhagavatam. It's like something, you know, from the Sistine Chapel or something. It's really, you know, gold and rock embroidered and embossed. And very, very elegant cover for Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam is Krishna. So they respect Bhagavatam like that. And then Bhagavatam is secretly sold for the, you know, cuts. And so inside the Bhagavatam we have 18,000 verses. And another little side comment there on that community is beautiful. We met a devotee there who analyzed Bhagavatam 3 times. He counted the number of verses in Bhagavatam. 18,000, because he said it wasn't adding up. So he's thinking, he's a computer guy, he likes analytics. So he's putting it through the stress test. He's got to find 80,000 verses in Bhagavatam. Everyone says it's 80,000 verses. So he counted the verses, not 80,000 verses. And then 12 cantos. Then he discovered something very interesting, that the 80,000 verses refers to Anusuk. This is something that Dr. Neshkuma might be interested in. He probably knows this already. But the 18,000 verses of Srimad Bhagavatam are calculated according to the Anusuk, not according to the prose, not according to the different types of meters of Bhagavatam. If you count the 18,000, if you count the verses in the top cantos, then you're going to get 18,000 verses in the top cantos. Just if you text one, text two, text three. But if you split up all of the syllables, and he did this, he split up every syllable in the Bhagavatam. So Anusuk has 8 syllables on one line. He made that the whole Bhagavatam into 8 syllables, each verse, and it came out to exactly 18,000 verses. And he did it 3 times to prove. He's a scientist. He did it 3 times to prove. So in this 18,000 verses, there's every possible form of literary embellishment and literary genre is presented in Bhagavatam. So we think we have some great, amazing literary traditions in the Western world, or in all different traditions, but they all derive their form and their understanding and the skill of writing based on this, on Bhagavatam, based on the non-Vedic literature. It's so vast and so comprehensive and so complex in detail. And indeed, we have our 16th century geniuses, literary geniuses, the Goswamis, the 6 Goswamis, who took the Srimad Bhagavatam and took this Vedic literature, and they analyzed it and presented it in so many detailed, fine ways, in all varieties of genres. Rupa Goswami was not just a brilliant author and a poet and a philosopher, but he was an artist and he was a sculptor. He actually sculpted the Radha-Dhamma Jiva Goswami, the small deity of Jiva Goswami. He crafted that deity with a sculptor. He was a brilliant painter, and he was in a position. He was brilliant in every field of knowledge. So the Goswamis are extraordinary, living entities, compatible living entities, eternal associates of the Lord. And they're presenting to us this deep philosophical understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam and the Vedic literatures, and providing us with the essence so that in this Kali Yuga we have the capacity to understand. Because it's too complex. That we hold the essence of the reason behind Shabyasadev's despondency was because he hadn't fully glorified Krishna. No one really helped him to understand and helped him to see that the cause of his feeling inadequate or feeling incomplete was because he hadn't fully glorified Krishna. And he'd done such great work in dividing the Vedas. The Vedas were far too complex as we were entering into the Kali Yuga. Who could understand and who could interpret or who could access such a vast volume of literature? So he did a great job of dividing the Vedas into sections. Because when we divide something up, when we compartmentalize things, we have a better capacity to understand them. As we put it in this little box. And this is Rig Veda. This is Yajur Veda. And then we can, okay, everything that comes in here is about ritual. Everything that's in here is philosophical understanding. Everything in here is to do with bhakti. So we compartmentalize it. And that enables the mind, that enables the learner to focus on a particular area of study, to focus on a particular area of need that we have. So we help compartmentalize it, divide it, and for our understanding. And the Goswamis did that further for us in Kali Yuga. And Rupa Goswami particularly provided us with a very detailed analysis of Rasa, the Rasa Acharya, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur came out. And Rupa Goswami provided us with this incredible, minute, very, very fine understanding of every aspect, every facet, every nuance of emotion that's capable for our human psyche. That comes from Krishna, it comes from a spiritual essence. And you'll read that if in the latter pages section of the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu or Srila Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion. We'll read very, very amazing detailed analysis of different moods and expressions of mood and the cause of that particular emotion that is aroused by some kind of experience, a trigger, udipan, something that triggers an emotion, triggers a thought, triggers a memory of Krishna. We'll read those details. And those details are presented with clarity and with precision and with very decisive, in a very decisive way. Not perhaps, it's likely so maybe, but this is how it is. When this happens, this happens. It's very scientific. Prabhupada says it's the science of Krishna consciousness. And then in any scientific arrangement, in any scientific experiment, there has to be a fit test. We have to have variables that is something that stays the same and something that we're changing to test to see what happens. So the Goswamis are the transcendental scientists, professors in their laboratory. And what is their laboratory? Their laboratory is under a tree. But they don't need very sophisticated systems, mainframes or sophisticated computers, technology. Their laboratory is in the forest. Vrindavan in the forest. And from in that forest, this is amazing many times, thinking about that. We have so many facilities with computer technology and with all digital sorts of information that we can access through search engines and through universities and online libraries and things, databases. If you enroll in a university, you'll get access to certain databases. Depending on your field of study. If you're in education, you get open up all these databases. If you're in science, you get all these databases. And unlimited, billions and billions and billions of bits of information that you can access through these other ways of scholarly papers and everything like that. Just imagine how much information is available. But that wasn't available in the 16th century. But they were able to produce such elevated, incredibly advanced understanding and literature that we couldn't come near in this modern day with all of our facilities, with all of our digital knowledge and analytics and everything that we're very proud of. We can't compare it. So that's a very long-winded introduction to this analysis of rasa. And because it's this emotion that Bharat's feeling has a cause, and the cause of that emotion is bhakti. The cause of that emotion is service. And that's the thing that we need to emphasize. That we don't get so much caught up in analyzing ourselves personally and in the public arena, but the different bhavas, sattvika bhavas, or the bhavas or the components that come together to create this rasa mixture, this mellow of bhakti. Because that's something that it's analyzed, it's articulated, it's written, and it's there for our understanding, but for our universal common presentation and understanding of Krishna consciousness is bhakti. The cause of the asasattva bhava, the cause for the sahi bhava, the cause for all the alambana and udipana is service. And Prabhupada says in the, and that's the connection between vaidya bhakti, sadhana bhakti, and raghunatha bhakti, some hands, devotion to Krishna, is service. That's the connection. That's what Prabhupada was so brilliant to be able to capture in his purports and his presentation of Krishna consciousness that nobody else was able to do, and maybe no one else would ever be able to do as well as Prabhupada did, is that he gave bhakti. The distinguishing, unique feature of Prabhupada's presentation is bhakti, devotional service. And it seems too obvious. It's lost in its simplicity. But it's bhakti, devotion. And if you read the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, and I'm sure all of you have read the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, and probably many times. I know I have, and BBC made a book with the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. It's such an important piece of writing that Prabhupada produced. And for me, the thing that stands out the most in that introduction, that 35 pages or whatever it is, 36 pages in introduction, is the word spirit. Prabhupada says, what is the need of another commentary on Bhagavad Gita? There's hundreds of commentaries on Bhagavad Gita. If you Google how many commentaries there are on Bhagavad Gita, there's hundreds and hundreds of children. So what is the need? The need is that Prabhupada said all of the commentators on Bhagavad Gita in the past have missed the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. And so you read that, it's in about the paragraph or six paragraph, and that sort of piques your interest. Prabhupada's talking about the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. So is he going to tell us what the spirit of Bhagavad Gita is? And he mentions the word spirit four or five, six times in that introduction. So it's really important, it's the essence, and Prabhupada says the spirit of Bhagavad Gita is submissiveness. The spirit of Bhagavad Gita is seva. That's what they fail to understand. And Bhagavad Gita as it is, inspired so many people to become devotees because of that understanding, seva. And in every other commentary, even other Vaishnava commentaries, Swami Uja Sampradaya or Madhva Sampradaya, Gita's that have been in our libraries much before Bhagavad Gita states here in Melbourne and in all over the world, these commentaries. But we never received from them, either academically, intellectually, we never received from them the idea of it's bhakti. Bhakti means service. Bhakti means you do something practical. And that's what Prabhupada gave us. 24 hours a day service. He said, famous for saying that, to engage us 24 hours in service, in Panchanda Bhakti. And that's the essence of higher levels of understanding rasa. We come to rasa tattva through bhakti, through the purification of the heart, chakravartanam arjanam. The dirt in the heart is cleansed by Lord Balaram's plow and his club. He's crushing the anathas and he's preparing, tilling the soil, the field, for the seed of bhakti lata to be planted through service. Service is a cultivation. Prabhupada used the term cultivation. Russian service is a cultivation. We're cultivating our relationship with Krishna, cultivating our heart, where Krishna will come and manifest in our heart. So, let's get back to why we're talking about this in the first place. And that's because Prabhupada says that when one is advanced in ecstatic love for Krishna, that means when you're first sparring and hairs are standing on end and talking voice and frothing at the mouth and quivering over the body, Ramancha Kampas Uttaranga Bhava. We see in the morning. And the spiritual master is always absorbed. And why is it Ramancha Kampas Uttaranga Bhava? Why is it the tears flowing from the eyes and the hair standing on end? And the body quivering. Because of Mahaprabhu Kirtana Nitya Gita Bhanitra. Because of the Kirtana Mahaprabhu. Because of engaging in these activities, Nitya, by dancing and chanting Gita and playing musical instruments, Bhanitra. That's why it comes. It doesn't just come out of the sky, it doesn't just fall upon us. It comes because we engage in Pansangada. Then we'll have the Ramancha Kampa Asu Ranga. Asu Ranga, the tears flowing from the eyes like rivers of Ganga. Because of Mahaprabhu's Kirtana, the Gita, the Gita. Because we engage in Pansangada Bhakti. So when one is actually advancing ecstatic love for Krishna, these symptoms, they transcendental physical symptoms manifest in the body. Those are the symptoms of perfection arising from the loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're the symptoms. What's the cause of the symptom? The cause of the symptom is loving service. And we have so much facility, particularly here in Auckland. All over the world, there's so much facility to engage in love and service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as sadhakas in this process of Panchanga Bhakti to come to, ultimately come to this platform of loving service. And when we do come to that platform, it's interesting because you would think the person you're reading this, okay, he's absorbed in loving service and he's giving up all attachment for material activities. That's what I was thinking would come next, right? Like in the pastime of Sudhana Rukha, the beginning of the chapter, the invocation of the chapter verse says that those who understand the essence of life, Visheshakuno, they will not give up the Uttama Shloka Katha. Now, they'll never give up hearing about Chaitanya. Krishna, because I understand the essence. And Vishana Kama Magana, Kama Magana, those who are free from the translation is disgusted. Those who are disgusted with the path of karma, of lust, of sense gratification, they'll never give it up. The question, the rhetorical question is asked, who'll give it up? They won't give it up. If you have this understanding the essence of life, you can't give up Krishna Bhakti. You can't leave that aside. If you are disgusted with the path of sense gratification, you can't give up Bhakti. But here it's not saying that. It says here, you give up regular principles, regular service to Krishna, service, the mobility, and doing the arti. He gave that up. So there's no question of material attachment or association with sense gratification. By giving up that process. Now, we can't prematurely do that, but we see many examples of it. in that sort of spontaneity that appears in the heart through the cultivation of loving service. We read recently in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam prayer, Krishna was coming to Indraprastha for the Rajasuya sacrifice. He was invited by the Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Yudhisthira Maharaj wants to perform this very special sacrifice, the Rajasuya sacrifice that very few emperors could perform, because the whole universe, everybody has to come under his rule, subjugation. He's the emperor. Proves. And he wanted to do that. There's many explanations given why he wanted to do so. It wasn't for a personal aggrandizing, it wasn't for personal position or power or glory, it was for Krishna. And it's a great example of how having the capacity, the amazing capacity that Yudhisthira Maharaj had for influencing and for setting example and for Ishvara Bhava with your protection and not exploitation. Ishvara Bhava with the control and propensity or capacity that he had to be shelter and to give knowledge and to give protection and not to exploit his citizens, his family members, the king, the father, not to exploit his family members, but to give them everything with love and affection of the father. So he didn't do that for his own personal position. Yudhisthira Maharaj called the Rajasuya sacrifice so that Krishna could be glorified. That everybody, all the leaders from the universe will come in. The demigod, everybody will come to this Rajasuya sacrifice. And in that Rajasuya sacrifice, Krishna will receive the first offering of the yajna. After the yajna, Krishna will be given. There'll be a debate, there'll be a discussion who should receive. And it will be concluded that Sahadev will conclude that Krishna is the most, in this audience of exalted sages and emperors, kings of the world and demigods, it was concluded that Krishna should be given the number one position. And of course, not everybody agreed, particularly Shishupala. We are not too happy with that decision of Sahadev. But nevertheless, everybody else practically agrees on, yes, Krishna is the supreme. Krishna is the one who should get this first offering. Even though he may not have materially, he might not be in that position. So in Yudhisthira Maharaj, when Krishna came to Indraprastha, he, first of all, he couldn't say anything. He was dumbfounded to see Krishna. Spontaneously he was thinking, but here is the object of his love and affection and worship, and he hasn't seen this. He hasn't seen Krishna for such a long time that he spontaneously embraces Krishna. He embraces the Lord. And then after he does formal some, well, he's seen, so he'll keep it that way. But he embraces him and then glorifies him and offers him a nice seat and things like that. But he couldn't offer any proper, the other kind of worship or anything like that because he became overwhelmed with his ecstatic, because to see Krishna. There's one of the devotee remembrances. Sometimes, or oftentimes, we listen to these devotee remembrances. And it's a great way to develop your attachment to Srila Prabhupada and understanding the greatness of Prabhupada. And also Prabhupada's disciples, getting to know his disciples through their connection with Srila Prabhupada. And there was one devotee, I tried to remember his name, I couldn't remember his name, but I remember what he said about Prabhupada. He was a temple president in America, North America, and Prabhupada was coming. And so there were all hundreds of devotees at the airport to greet Srila Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada came to the airport, he came out of the airport, he was driving. So he got out of the car and opened the door and he saw Prabhupada for the first time. And he went up and hugged Prabhupada. He was hugging him and everyone was like, oh, yeah, like a guru, you know, like that. But he was hugging because he said he loved so much, he just helped so much. Wow, he's my father, my spiritual father. And this one hangs in hope. So in this mood of the devotees, will transgress the rules and regulations of etiquette or of service out of spontaneous attraction. And there's no offense there. And Prabhupada didn't say, I'm hugging on the roof. No hugs. but he accepted it because it had affection. The same way he did with Mr. Sethi. If you read in the Prabhupada Rita, those of you, everybody who studies Prabhupada Rita knows that you have to study Prabhupada Rita to take shelter and to get it to a Bhakti Shastri degree or whatever, so you have to study Prabhupada Rita. It's not like a chore, it's a punishment, but it's a pleasure. I get to study Prabhupada Rita. I get to do it, I don't have to do it. I get to, and I'm relished to do it. And in there you read about Mr. Sethi. And Mr. Sethi is, and I've heard this part, I've heard him speak this pastime personally about Prabhupada. It's an amazing pastime. He was the man who helped to save Radhasi Hari's temple in Jubilee. And the authorities were trying to shut down the temple and everything like that. And there was Mr. Sethi was walking past one day. And then he saw one American Mataji offering full dandavats in front of Radharasa Vihari, and the priest and their lucky and everything like that, ready to smash down the tin shed of Radharasa Vihari in front of the Juba temple. And she was stopping him by doing full dandavats. And he saw that in the world. And he went to find out what was happening. He's a big, very influential person, a big contractor in the building industry. So he, from that time when he saw that devotion of this Western devotee lying down in front of these policemen ready to smash down the heart, that he thought, well, something special about this person, something's going on here in this temple. So he kind of adopted Juju, and he fought many times for the protection of the temple and the land, and helped the devotees sort many things out there completely. And Prabhupada was very fond of this Mr. Sethi because he was doing so much service. And he took up to his building the beautiful guest house that we still have there in Juba. He was the person who was commissioned to build that. And he wasn't just a very wealthy kind of CEO of the company, but he got down there with the bricks and mortar and the cement and stuff like that. And he was on the site. And he was making sure that nothing went the wrong way and everything went the right way. And the Krishna, Radharasa, Harris, was a service of Prabhupada, Mr. Sethi. So one day he was finished a long day at work at Juba, and he was all covered in cement dust and all stuff. So he was dirty from 12 or 14 hours on the site. And imagine, being there all day. And there's going to be concrete pour and everything like that. So he's thinking, but I can't leave without some Prabhupada. He's the first of all, I think he's a Prabhupada. He's my camera, he's a Prabhupada. He's looking at me. I look, you know, I've got cement dust all over me. I'm filthy and I sleep like anything. So I can't go and see Prabhupada. And then he said, but I can't leave the property without saying, you know, without acknowledging Prabhupada. He's Prabhupada's here and it's his property, it's his mission. So he went there. He went out to see Prabhupada like this. And Prabhupada was really, you know, welcomed him and was very happy to see him. And Prabhupada asked him, when he saw him, he said, you know, Mr. Sethi, you're building this temple for Krishna and for the devotees. You're making a house for the devotees here, the guest house for them, so the devotees can live in comfortable. He said, yes, Shri Prabhupada. And he said, and you will have, Krishna will build a house for you in the Loka Vrindavan. And he said, no, Prabhupada, it's impossible. I don't follow like this, you guys, you know, I'm not like the Sadhaka, like you Vaishnavas. And how can I go to the Loka Vrindavan? It's not even. And Prabhupada said, I will make sure that Krishna builds a house for you in the Loka Vrindavan. You're making this house for the devotees. So Sethi was obviously, and he told that story on a number of occasions, and probably become readers in this one, to demonstrate his love for Prabhupada and how Prabhupada has this incredible reciprocation with anybody who serves in his mission, anybody who becomes connected with Srila Prabhupada and his mission, his benefit. Even if he's not performing, it doesn't appear to be externally to be performing the sadhana that we perform, but we're trying to perform 16 rounds and breaking up earlier. So spontaneously, we'll often And at higher levels, we'll disregard the regulated principles. But that's not for now. For now, it's safer. For now, it's not wasting time. You know, the asasattvika bhavas that manifest in advance, the devotee who is experiencing higher levels of Krishna consciousness, his heart is melted. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a beautiful verse that talks about the softness of the heart that comes from this Shuddhasattva Visheshatma. That Shuddhasattva Visheshatma is the softness comes from performing devotional service in transcendental state of goodness, pure goodness, Shuddhasattva Visheshatma. When we perform that bhakti in pure goodness, then chitta means of consciousness, it becomes melted, softened, it says. And the word is masrinya, chitta masrinya in that verse, in the name of devotion. It's quoted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there, that's the beginning of the understanding, the beginning of Nijabhakti to bhava. What is bhava? Bhava is when we perform our bhakti in pure devotional service. When our heart is softened. And when the heart is softened, we're ready to receive Krishna. And then we begin. It said it's like a Surya Amsu. It's like a ray of the sun. Prema Surya Amsu. It's a ray of the sun. It's not the sun. It's not full blown prema. But it's a ray of the sun. And that ray, that will become more and more condensed as the practitioner, as the sadhaka, as we practice bhakti, that becomes a more and more intense ray of sun of prema, of bhakti. And that comes from seva. So there's a very interesting story in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Chaitanya Charitamrita and Srimad Bhagavatam are full of bhava. It's full of emotion. It's full of every type of kind of ecstatic emotion that is conceivable and is analyzable by Guru Goswami in his Bhagavatam and his Sindhu. The amazing degree of the fineness of the nuance that he is able to extract from an exchange or from a look or from a feeling or from a knowledge. Thank you, Prabhu. That engine in the room there was like a bit intense. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita we hear a lot, an amazing amount of description of Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy and his bhava that he feels through separation from Krishna. And even in the early stages of the Sankirtan movement, when Lord Chaitanya came back from Maya and he started to exhibit different symptoms, and all his family members and local residents were thinking that he had a wind disorder or he had some kind of material disease, and they were getting all the cuttings in the doctors and everybody to examine him, but they couldn't find what the cause of this disease was. And who found the cause of the disease? Shivastakur. Shivastakur came and he analyzed the disease and he said, "This is a disease that I want to catch. I want to be contaminated by this disease." And he told Mother Sachi not to worry. Don't be concerned for this disease. This disease is love of God. This is not epilepsy. When he's going through this, he's not having a black epilepsy fit. He's having a seizure of love of God. He's completely absorbed. And sometimes the disciple was there for days. Sometimes he would go into his ecstasy for days and days. And Lord Nityananda, when Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya first met, then they manifest many symptoms of what are described here as asasattvika bhavas. And when he went to Lord Chaitanya, he collapsed and he was taken to the house of Sadhguru Bhattacharya. And the world is not understanding what was going wrong with him. But Sadhguru could understand that these were asasattvika bhavas, the asasattvika bhavas. But in the Chaitanya Bhagavad, we hear a story of Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur he came across this Saint Chama. And Saint Chama was doing a special kind of a dance. And he was describing the Leela Kaliya Leela. the pastime of Lord Krishna dancing on the roots of Kali, Sijanika. And Haridas Thakur, when he heard this description of his Lord, of Krishna, dancing and subduing Kali, and doing this incredible dance on this moving stage of the woods of Kali, he was completely captivated and he was rolling on the ground in ecstasy, and he manifested these different bars, sweating, perspiring, frothing at the mouth, and his hair was sweating on him. And everybody, and the snake charmer himself, was doing the dance and was doing the performance. He stood back and he was often respecting Haridas. This is the real thing. He's really in the path of Krishna consciousness, because he can't bear to hear about the past of Krishna. And there was one envious Brahmin in the crowd, and he saw Haridas Thakur. Who is this guy? He's a Muslim. He doesn't have any. I'm a Brahmin. I've been born a Brahmin family. I chase my lineage back to Kasyapa Muni. I'm a solitary Brahmin. And Haridas Thakur is a Muslim guy. He's rolling on the ground. Everybody's giving him respect. So then when Haridas Thakur left, the charmer started doing his dancing and doing more performance. And the Brahmin thought, now it's my turn. He's rolling on the ground. Rolling and screaming and yelling like this, and then everyone's going, "What? What's this guy?" And then the snake charmer beating with a stick. Get out. And then the road is going to be man, he's this big as Brahma. How do you beat this Brahma? What are you beating Brahma for? He said, "This Brahma, he's not better than me. He's envious. He's trying to imitate. He doesn't have, that's not coming from the heart." He said, this astrocytic, all of these symptoms of power can be manifested. You can pretend. You can exhibit them. Somebody can shiver, somebody can make their mouth froth, somebody can make their hair stand on neck, somebody can roll them around. Sometimes in Vrindavan, a few times in the old days, particularly used to say, rolling on the ground in front of Radha Shamsundar. Rolling everywhere. Those things can be, you can do those things, but they're not necessarily an indication of the purity of the heart. You can fake those things. But you can't fake little bhakti, like Haridas Thakur, we can't, that's not a fact, because it's just spontaneously arouses and people can understand when it's genuine. People understand. And when it's not genuine, then people can understand and keep you in the head because you're not genuine. But so Rupa Goswami says, alright, if these symptoms can be faked, if somebody can fake their symptoms, then what are some symptoms that we can have that are solid? What are some symptoms that we can have, some characteristics of somebody who's advancing in bhakti that can't be faked? And he gives those in the Nectar Devotion. Prabhupada gives those. Prabhupada quotes them in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in a couple of purports, and in the Nectar Devotion. So I wanted to finish up with those symptoms. We don't have time to analyze the symptoms, but let's hear the list of the symptoms that are not fakeable. These things are symptoms of somebody, characteristics of somebody who's genuinely developing their consciousness and is preparing the heart for Krishna to manifest. The first one is avyata kalapanam. Number one. Avyata kalapanam means he doesn't waste a moment in Krishna service. No spacing out the book. We don't waste any time in a day. The 24 hours are precious. Every moment is precious for a devotee who's in this bhava stage. For us, not so precious. But when we advance, we won't want to waste any time in Krishna service. We have this golden opportunity to do some service for Krishna. We're not going to sleep. We're not going to let the eyes lie down. We're not going to blink. Because we've got the opportunity. That's what I come from. And Prabhupada said in the Ratiyatra, first Ratiyatra, not first Ratiyatra, but in one of the Ratiyatra lectures, and he made some beautiful lectures in Ratiyatras, if you visit. One of them, he says, the purpose for Ratidaksha, he gave us two different explanations. One is a direct explanation of Varanagrishna, separation and union. And then he said, the reason why we're doing this Ratidaksha festival is so that the devotees can engage 24 hours in service to Krishna. Because you never know Ratidaksha time, you don't sleep. You've got to build those cards. And in Moomba time, Bhakti, you're not sleeping, right? In the Moomba, we used to have this Moomba procession in Melbourne. And we made these Bhakti, we were in Devantara, we just made these incredible cards. We probably seen pictures of them. And for years, we did them. Rama, I remember the beautiful Rama. I was a monkey. I was in a monkey suit that was boiling hot. The moon was in March or something. It was really hot. And I told them myself on the field that they were they're running around in monkey suits with tails. And Shanti was round or Lakshman. Shanti Kaya was on the float playing the Vina or something. It was an amazing. Some of the but you don't sleep during that time. When you're organizing these big festivals, when you don't have time, you guys are not sleeping right now. You can't sleep, there's too much going on. And we've got to be up to 12 o'clock anyway, but you just can't sleep because there's too much happening for days. That's when we get a taste. We get a little taste for what it means to be a Vyakta Kalakram, not wasting any time. Countdown's on. I remember when we opened the temple, the new temple in Auckland, 2004. The build-up to that opening was very intense. The devotees are there, and Pallav Muni, who's done so much service, he passed away a few years ago. He's done so much service in ISKCON and the Samadhi in Mayapur, so he did a lot of work in the temple there. We're finishing off the doors and the floors and the halls. You know, we're finishing off right at the last minute when the dignitaries are all coming up the stairs. They're still polishing. Everything is like intense. So we won't. You don't sleep for the days before that because it's just too intense. Right? Because when the devotees come to the chicken, they're trying to read marathon, they don't sleep. Or they'll sleep very little. That's a full absorption. And that's a little window into that. The reality of bhakti that is continuous, it doesn't stop. The second line is perseverance, shanti. You'll hear that in the Bhagavad Gita as a quality of Krishna. Shanti Raja Manevacha. It means that in there you have your tolerance, to tolerate everything, to tolerate anything that comes your way. No matter what it is, we're going to stick at this because we're doing this for a higher purpose. This is not for my personal sense gratification, it's for my purification, and it's for Prabhupada's glory. Right? We're engaging in this service to be as transparent as mediums for Prabhupada, that we can give Prabhupada's mercy to as many people as we can. Because we have that conviction and that connection with Prabhupada, we're able to become, to persevere, to tolerate all the things that go on in our lives, to put them aside for a higher purpose. Third one is vibhakti. It means detachment. Completely detached from material. And the only way to become detached from material sense gratification is to attach to Krishna. And Prabhupada says many times that either you have a sakti for Krishna or you have a sakti for Maya. He says, Maya Svaha. So many soldiers to Vietnam, all Svaha, beautiful. He's talking from the Maya Saktamana Partha Yoga Nujana Ashrama, verse 7 1. Prabhupada actually meant more than any other person in Gita. And in one lecture, he says he's talking about the Sakti, and he's analyzing, giving many examples of the Sakti. How you either have a Sakti for your dog, or you have a Sakti, you have a passion for a dog, or you have a passion for God. And where your sati is, your attachment, that's where you give your swaha, that's where you give your offering. So, attachment to Krishna, vidakti, detachment. And manasunyata, means free from pridelessness. You know, I put this pridelessness into, put it into word, Microsoft Word, and see what the, you know, spell checker does to it. It's quite entertaining. The third, it says pridelessness, and then it does autocorrect to pricelessness. Because it doesn't get, pridelessness is not a word in the dictionary. But, and there's many things like that in the Torah, vernacular, that don't come up in the Microsoft Word. Or maybe any editors, for that matter. So pridelessness is, the minor is an interesting word. In the Maori language, the native music world, they have this word mana also. This is mana sumita, become free from pride. In the Maori language, it means position. Like you have, if you have mana, you have authority. Like if you have mana in Maori kingdom, or in New Zealand, they say, he's got mana. Like that guy's got mana. Means he's got an air of authority. People will listen to him. He's got mana, he's got tradition, heritage, and he's done good works. So because of good things that he's done in the community, think about he got this mana. So mana is a Sanskrit word. Because mana sumita means we're free from that kind of designation of that. And that's the feeling of being humble, even though somebody's super qualified. They remain humble in front of their spiritual master. They remain humble in front of the process of bhakti. Even if they have many good qualities, many good things. Ashwabandha means, Prabhupada's classic, is to hold in his hope. You never give up hope. I was talking to a devotee the other day in Belgium, and his wife had multiple sclerosis for 10 years or something. And starting to decrease, you know, so her body starting to diminish now more and more, she's requiring assistance. But he said, we're hoping in his hope that something will happen and she'll be able to develop strength. But that hope of his hope is that Krishna can do anything, miracle on second hand. Krishna can do anything. And we have that conviction, as the devotee said. That things might seem to be insurmountable. We might seem to be coming up against so many obstacles in our course of our bhakti. But we hope against hope that Krishna will make arrangements that will navigate our path through these complexities. And then there's an intense eagerness to achieve pure loving service. That's Samut Kanta. Like Lord, intensity, greed for bhakti. And the next one is very important, Nani and Sadhavi Ji, that we have this taste for chanting for our name, the Lord, always chanting. Kitani and Sadhavi. And again, what's the cause? The cause is humility, the cause is tolerance. To get that Nani and Sadhavi Ji, we have to have those qualities of. You have to love that quality. And the devotees, as we advance, we realize that the quality of our chanting is the most important thing in our lives. And the quality of our chanting is most, we get to chant the holy name of the Lord. And we start to increase our attachment for that, for the chanting, and make arrangements for that, and to increase that chanting. Sometimes that numerical strength is important to develop more of a taste for chanting. We bump it up sometimes. Special holiday, an apocrypha, or a appearance day, or a day where there's not much on the agenda. The calendar, there's nothing on, no appointments today. Could be a great opportunity to bump up the amounts. Push in 5 more, push in another 10 amounts, but nothing else on today. Or finish everything for the week. Okay, so. Increase that numerical strength is important. We consider that we're not going to spend the rest of our 50 years in this body chanting 16 rounds a day. Or if we did 16 pure rounds, for sure. But sometimes that numerical strength helps us. Bhikkhu Krishnamurti one time said, talking about this point, that talking about chanting 64 rounds, because he says that initiation, I think, that. The devotees, he says, how many rounds? And they say 16 rounds. And he says, on the Codicil, and they say 64. 64 rounds. Is there any Bhikkhu Krishnamurti disciples? But probably had Chinese 64. But, you know, he says if you can, he doesn't say you have to, but he says if you can, I promise you, come to that. So he says, you know, the first 16, and then we talk about it, the first 16 rounds is like a little bit, you know, in the sports club, you know, the big seniors are out there playing the game at half time. The little league kind of, little fellas kind of out on the field, and they play the game, right? It's kid kind of entertainment at half time. And then the big guys kind of like that, the real football, so the little league are out there. So he says the first 16 are like a little league. Go out there and say, hey, but then the second 16 is like serious, they're Christians. Now, the first 16 in your hands is Americans. But after that, it's Christians, you know, we're on Christian time, not on my time. So we need to really focus on that time. Asaktiskabunakane, that's a deep addiction for glorifying Krishna's activities. I mean, that's another class, and that's a very something the Bhagavatam says, like, that's what Bhagavatam is. It's Chandrasrota, that we have a desire to hear. Vidyanyananta Dhyasya. I want to hear about Krishna's valor, about his glory, about his success. He said, he's my hero. Krishna's my hero. I want to hear that. It's Chandrasrota. Hey, Prabhu. Prabhu, speak about Krishna. Tell me about Krishna. That's what I desire to do. And Pritistapurasati study. To have that desire for living in the holy place, or a love for living in the Lord's dharma, a love for living in the temple. This is the dharma of Krishna. A love for living in my house, the dharma of Krishna. We worship Krishna, the dharma. A love for living there. A love for living there, my house. My house, it's Krishna's house. A love to live there. And we keep it clean, keep it tidy, keep it organized. Because Christians, then we love it. We love to live there. We love to live in Vrindavan. We love to live in Mayapur. But we love to live wherever Krishna is, that's the dharma. Wherever Krishna is glorified, that's the dharma. So these nine characteristics of somebody in bhava, the preliminary stages of love, that can't be faked. You can't fake it for a long time anyway. So I love chanting Hare Krishna, and then the next day you feel doing something else, completely different. It's consistency, it's something over time that you can't do. So if initiate, sorry, I'm a little bit long, I'm going to a little bit of ecstasy to see Lord Balaram and his tribes there. That was a nice surprise to the Krishna Balaram's mercy. He's probably going to whack me in the head with that flower. Are there any comments or questions?
Actually, the main sentence that you mentioned, we did that from the preparation.
Yeah.
So, even at the Nishtha stage, we can see all these nice symptoms developed in a person. So, how does from Nishtha to Bhava they differ? How can you differentiate someone from who's on the Nishtha stage in the Bhava stage?
Okay, so Sri Chaitanya was saying that even in the Nishtha stage, these nine symptoms of preliminary of bhava are manifest. So what is the distinction between Nishtha and bhava? Between this steadiness in what we're doing and bhava. Technically, I couldn't really give any definitive answer there. But, And I don't really think that for the purposes of the above analysis, I think it's not so important to understand the kind of the distinctions between the stages, but rather the importance is utilizing that time in developing tolerance and developing taste for holy name. I mean, the stages are given for a purpose, and so it is important to understand the stages. And at different stages, like Vinod Thakur says, at different stages, there are different rules and regulations at different stages of bhakti. So, when we come in the dosha, at the beginning stage, we have a different set of rules and regulations than we do at present. So, from Vishuddha to present. these different stages. But the distinction between that, even though all of these, I don't know, well, these are specifically given in the Bhakti Smriti Sindhu as characteristics of Bhava. So I'm not sure why they would be given earlier.
Thanks for a really wonderful class, Prana. Thank you very much. It was very enjoyable. Prabhu, there's one thing I wanted to ask in regards to your discussion about Mr. Sati. So sometimes a devotee may think, recalling that sort of pastime, that if I'm fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, sometimes I can skip out on doing my sadhana, because I know Prabhupada will protect me and I'm doing service, and as he said to Mr. Sati, I'm building you a house in Goloka Vrindavan. So sometimes we can be a little complacent about our service. Could you just talk on that a little bit?
Sure. We have time. I can talk on a little bit. But it's a very good question, and it's a practical application of philosophical understanding that I'm working hard for Krishna, and I don't have to change on ground, so I'm working hard. And there are certain instances when that was sanctioned by Prabhupada, not just with the safety with certain disciples, and said, you don't have to chant because you're doing so much service, you don't have to chant. There was one or two, very few times, right? Prabhupada made these concessions. But mostly he said, how do you think you're so special? Why do you think your service is so important that you can't go to Mangalati? He said that many times to the devotees, that it is very senior devotees. That you have to do these services. No matter what the service is, you have to engage in this sadhana. So we would always err on the side of caution and consider that when you're in the position of Mr. Sethi or in the position of some exalted devotee or Prabhupada said you didn't have to do something. But I'm a devotee that needs everything that's available to prepare my heart for Krishna, to purify myself. So I need to engage in this sadhana, I need to apply myself to the sadhana, I need to increase the sadhana, not to decrease it because I'm busy doing something else, because service for Krishna. But sometimes when we're busy doing service for Krishna, we forget why we're doing, who we're doing service for. And we can become confused and think that it's for me, that I'm getting this certain benefits from doing this service, or deriving a certain type of satisfaction or relief or whatever it is, position from doing this work for Krishna. And by doing sadhana, we're reminded why we're doing what we're doing, for who we're doing it. And that's the importance of sadhana, is that regulation keeps reminding us, it's a continual reinforcement that I'm doing this for Krishna, I'm doing this for Prabhupada. The reason why we're stressing out, the reason why we're doing this is because there's a higher purpose. We're fighting on the battle of Krishna, thinking of Krishna. We're working and thinking of Krishna. So we're able to do that through application of asana. Yes.
So we have Mahaprabhu's instruction, which is Trinada Pisanijayam. And people progressing in Krishna consciousness, it's somewhat hard to embrace that instruction, or do we think that God's will be my future position? Like, how can we be enthusiastic about, reaching that goal of Trinada Pisanijayam? It's not very encouraging for sadhakas to think that that's the way I have to go.
How do we develop enthusiasm for the process of, for the goal of becoming Trinadapi? It's really, it is a goal, but it's the means, it's the process, it's a quality. It's interesting when we talk about qualities and values of devotees. they're intrinsic, they're in the soul. They're not external things that are replacing them outside. They're already in the soul and they have to be revealed. They have to be evolved. The soul's evolving. We call it the transformation process. So humility is already there. Tolerance is already there. It's the quality of the Atman, of the soul. And by engaging the bhakti, then Lord Balaram gets out the plow and he helps us. It's not that we have to do it ourselves. Where we get assistance from the spiritual master, from the devotees, from Krishna himself, to help us to develop our attachment for Krishna. As we develop our attachment for Krishna, detachment from the mental energy, those qualities will naturally develop. So it's intrinsic. It's not necessarily the goal that I have to become tolerant, and I have to become tolerant, and if it's focused on I have to become tolerant, then we'll probably become intolerant. We can't be taught, but I can't become tolerant. We have to focus on Krishna, Krishna. And if we focus on Krishna and service to Krishna, service to the Vaishnavas, then those qualities, Sadhakans, Kamakatasa, all the qualities of the demigods will become manifest. It's, you know, when it says it's spontaneous or it's it happens without. What's the word I'm looking for? They automatically appear. When something automatically appears, it doesn't mean that it automatically appears without any endeavor. We have to endeavor and then it will naturally appear. That those qualities will naturally manifest. Okay, it's getting late. Thank you very much.